Blog Talk Radio.
Hearts of LNP, brought to you by the late night poets at allpoetry.com. The group hosts shows every night of the week on a variety of topics to ensure that there is something for everyone to enjoy. And if you want to support our shows, we do have anthologies available on Amazon, which boast a wonderful selection of poetry offered up by the poets of our group. Tonight, with the gracious permission of several of our members and those in the community of All Poetry, we've brought a reading list for your listening pleasure. I encourage you to come in, find a comfortable seat, and make yourself at home. I am happily your host, Victoria Frost. Tonight, as the new year revolves around, it reminds us that in each way, we have many new beginnings. Sometimes that's the beginning of a year, sometimes it's a change in a job, perhaps it's even a change in the chapter of your life. It's those opportunities to start afresh. Those places where we get to stand once more on level ground and decide if we are going to rise to the occasion or tumble back down. It lets us sit and think of where we have been and where we wish to go. And tonight we delve into that idea. into those new beginnings and all their ways and their varieties and how they impact our life. And here to help me with the show, to hang out with me and be amazing as she always is, I believe we have Pam. How are you doing tonight, Pam?
Hey, doing good. How are you doing?
I'm doing really good. I started at a new firm just this last week. It snowed, so my commute is normally 4 minutes, but with the snow, it's 6. So as you can tell, I just have a killer commute now.
Oh, yes. Well, that I have to say is pretty awesome. And a great topic for tonight. I'm really glad that you only now have that 4 to 6 minute commute, which means, you know, getting to spend more time with family and not as much stress for you.
Absolutely. For listeners who may not know me as well, maybe new to the show or just haven't gotten to interact with me, previously the firm I was working for had me getting up at 4 o'clock in the morning, commuting 1 hour one way, working till about 7 or 8 o'clock at night and then commuting an hour back. So I am definitely excited about it. My hours pre-tax season have been 8:30 to 4:30, which is such a huge difference. Getting to have that morning, that routine of getting to wake up, spend time with my babies, set the day off on a really nice foot and then be home before dinner. It's such a phenomenal thing. And even during tax season, they've told me my hours are going to be 8 to 6. So I'm like, I can do that because I was doing far worse than that before. So I'm good though. I'm really, really excited. And I'm good. How's life been for you? Did you have a good New Year's?
I did, you know, nothing exciting, but it was good, and so far so good, so, yeah.
Good.
Very
good.
My daughter, Nessa, made all 3 of the meals on New Year's Day, so I got a complete break from cooking. She made pancakes for breakfast, kebabs for lunch, and it was like, you know, like fruit and cheese. Like one of the kebabs was basil. Leaves, fresh basil leaves, cherry tomatoes, and little like fresh balls of mozzarella cheese. And then the other ones were like fruit kebabs. But dinner was the absolute best. For dinner, she cooked us potatoes and onions and T-bone steaks and sauteed mushrooms.
Oh my gosh. Oh, my
yeah.
gosh. Does she want to come and cook at my house by chance? Like, I won't say no.
Well, I'll definitely have to ask her. But, no, I was really impressed and really felt spoiled that day.
Oh, good, good. That is amazing. My husband ended up just doing, I don't know, we've kind of been doing this weird thing. How do I explain it? For New Year's, we completely forgot it was New Year's for a hot second. So he ended up running over and he got his dry aged steak. So it was fantastic with like just some heirloom carrots. And so he candied roasted the heirloom carrots, just did like a normal steak for the dry aged steak and then did some roasted potatoes, like nothing crazy. But then for dinner today, we just ate the charcuterie board that we were supposed to eat over New Year's, like going into New Year's, but being the old fogies that we are, I know we're not, but being the old fogies that we are, on New Year's, we gave up and went to bed at 10 p.m. So, so we ate a charcuterie board today for dinner because I'm that cool.
Oh, I understand that.
Oh, well, we have a few things to look at tonight. I'm going to start us off with a piece by Naomi Sarah called Pieced Together. And Pam, would you mind giving this a read for us?
I would be happy to. All right. Pieced Together Pieces by Naomi Sarah. And it goes like this. I walk into Alice's restaurant in my imagination or in a dream. Sit at a little table in the corner, order a cup of coffee and some apple pie on the side, and I scribble upon a napkin pieced together pieces of poetry some old and some shiny brand new, some old and some shiny brand new, piece together pieces of poetry, some old and some shiny brand new, as outside raindrops drum upon shimmers of sunlight to the delightful beat of rainbowed umbrellas. Oh, dancing, dancing in the wind, up and down on glistening sidewalks. The trees are dressed in rusty reds and orangey yellows as beds of leaves lay at their feet, awaiting the blanketed softness of snow. And overhead geese, as overhead geese honk, their hurtled verses fading into a black speck on the distant sky as leaves tumble across lawns to settle at the foot of a for sale sign in front of a new lifeless home. There's a trash bin stands at the end of its empty driveway like a huge period. And I scribble upon a napkin, piece together pieces of poetry, some old and some shiny brand new, some old and some shiny brand new, and I scribble upon a napkin, piece together pieces of poetry, some old and some brand new, some old and some brand new. And in the other corner, a heartbroken piano man in a raspy roar of rock and roll refrain belches out the kind of love that turns umbrellas inside out as you'd never dance singing in the rain, flips over magician's hats so you never again hum abra, abracadabra. As for the rain pelts, the window panes, and I see my beaten reflection mirrored in one single drop, and I shudder under the rippling effect of me slamming that door shut and walking away from you, walking away from you, walking away from you, walking away from you. And I scribble upon a napkin, piece together pieces of poetry, some old and some shiny brand new, some old and some shiny brand new, piece together pieces of poetry, like rainbowed umbrellas dancing, shiny and brand new, glistening and dancing in the rain, in the wind. End poem.
Oh, that was beautifully read, Pam. Thank you so much. I think what's so stunning about this piece to me, first, is that repetition, because it makes you stop and think. There's multiple parts in this that are repeated. So we have the second stanza, and I scribble upon a napkin, piece together pieces of poetry, some old and some shiny brand new, some old and some shiny brand new. And then that's repeated in the third, fourth, fifth, sixth, and then again in the seventh, eighth, ninth. And I think what I love about that is that it reminds us that in so many ways, these new beginnings can also be cyclical. These times when we get to reimagine ourselves, recreate ourselves, they tend to be much like that phoenix. We don't always quite stop being what we are, stop being who we are. It just kind of grows and it evolves. And sometimes we revisit that origin story, if you will. And so I love this piece for that. But I also love how when she's speaking of those pieces of poetry, and I'm one of those people when I write, sometimes I'll have a thought. I don't know how many other people are like this, but I'll have a thought or something will capture my attention and it will be awe-inspiring to me. And so I'll scribble down an idea, I'll scribble down a thought, and I might keep that in a little book shelved away and I'll revisit it. And it's technically an old thought, but oftentimes I might be able to build on it at a later date. It's just not a complete thought when I first think of it. And so it is those old pieces and those brand new pieces. Sometimes I take a poem and I rewrite it with a new, changing your medium, if you will, a new brush stroke, a new type of paint, if you will. I rewrite these poems that were written long ago, and now I have a better understanding of word usage or a better understanding of how to create imagery. Not that I'm like the end-all be-all poet, but it is bringing back in that old and that new. And all of this to me speaks of that, not just in the sense of writing, but also in the way that life continues on. And yet sometimes we find ourselves back in that same spot, perhaps a little bit more disheveled, perhaps a little bit more beaten down, but we always find ourselves back at that revolving door with the opportunity to go in or stay out, to go on a new adventure or continue one that we know so well. And we piece those pieces together to create what we are, to create poetry, to create the paths that we take, the relationships that we find ourselves in. We have those opportunities in the mundane to make those changes and decisions that might even alter the course of how we previously knew this cycle to play out. I thought it was a really stunning piece, and I really truly love the repetition because it keeps bringing us back to the reuse of things, the way that we can meld the old and the new, and how it does not cement us in one spot either. What did you think of it, having read it?
Yeah, this is one I've read before, and it was worth reading again. You know, I like how what you brought up there, Victoria, about the idea of how sometimes we get a piece of an idea, and we save it and we put it aside until a later time when we're able to expand on it. I occasionally will build up enough drafts on all poetry, and you know, that I'll simply take a little bit of lines here and there from drafts, and I'll call it like my quilting poetry, because I'm just taking tidbits from every single like draft, which can include anything from, it could be a whole poem on its own, but there's a certain parts I don't like, to, you know, a word or a line, you know. And what's really cool about this, right, is it's actually in part a found poem, because a few of these verses or these stanzas are actually poems that she has on All Poetry. And so what she did is she took the repetitive line, and I scribble upon a napkin, piece together pieces of poetry, that repetitive line along with the beginning, and added her old poetry into it to form something new. And I like how she uses poetry as that representation that you can make new from the old. I just really found this very clever. And I found that the way she spoke on the whole idea of we can't let go of something, that something still has value, it was really important. So just an excellent write and very well done.
That was such a beautiful comment. And it's nice, I think it's good for people to hear, because we're all in our own different stages of poetry writing. But I remember when I first started in poetry, and this goes back to your comment, but when I first started in poetry, very young, when the only real like poetic tool I knew was rhyming, and hug and bug was like my favorite rhyme. we've all been there.
Mm-hmm.
But I remember like I'd write these poems, and they would be like, I would write them in their totality. And I would just be like, look at this poem that I just wrote, you know, and it was not good. It was not good. For, you know, probably for like a fourth, fifth, third grader, it was a really great poem, but it was not good. Or even sixth grader, it just was not good compared to what I've learned to write now. I think it's good for people to learn that you're able to have incomplete thoughts, that you're able to revisit things, that you can change a draft, you can change a poem, that none of these things are cemented in. That they can always evolve with us. And I love how you even mentioned that, you know, you'll write a draft and you'll come back to it a couple times, because you can write a piece and you can love it, but it doesn't always, like any draft, you know, it's always not always complete. It could be better, and maybe you just need fresh eyes. And I think this piece, your comment, really highlighted that, really highlight this idea that we don't have to, we don't have to be stuck with the first attempt. We don't have to be stuck in, you know, the one shot try. We can evolve and we can change, and our poetry can do that. And that every poet out there, no matter the level that they're at, and every writer and every artist of every kind can always go back and revisit and change, that we aren't stuck by our first attempts. So I think that was such a phenomenal, phenomenal comment. And thank you for sharing that about yourself, Pam. I appreciate you. All right, up next we have Of Ashes and Embers by Argo Ring.
Oh, just
Argo,
so you know, you have somebody waiting to be picked up.
Oh, I am a horrible person. There are several people waiting. This, I know we have the most amazing Faze on the line. Hello, Faze.
Hello, Victoria and Pam.
Did you get a chance to read that other poem?
No, I'm sorry. I didn't really get to it on time.
No, that's totally okay. I just wanted to make sure that I didn't just skip to the next poem in case you'd gotten to hear it. And we do have an area code 602. Who are we speaking with?
Greetings in the name of Father, Son, and Holy Spirit. This is Pastor Don Jr., CEO. Man, I love your network. I love what you're doing. I love your energy. And thank God y'all are actually talking about it, because if y'all didn't talk about it, it would never happen.
Absolutely. Well, thanks for joining the show. Are you going to here to stick around with us for a little bit?
I'm going to be here all night since the TV set me off. When
I love it.
Come on.
I love it. I love it. And did you get a chance to hear that last poem by chance?
I did. And I'm going to tell you, everything moves in God's realm. What was said is for the world. Not everybody's going to understand it, but you got to take it for what it is and ride for what you got. Period.
I love that. And you're right. You know, everything does move around, and we get to change and move and explore all of our writing and grow. So that was a stunning comment. Thank you for that.
Amen. No, I'm here. I'm here. I had to be an avid listener to call in and say, where's my hand? Number one. I'll press one. Included.
Well, I am very thankful that you're here. I am going to have us move on to the next poem that we're going to read. And this is going to be called Of Ashes and Embers by Argo Wings. And I will give this one a read.
Yes, ma'am. I'm right.
Cimmerian shade wraps a cloak across the remnants of day. What was that, my friend?
Put me on mute, because you're a real radio host. Put me on mute, and I'm here. You're
okay.
You're a real radio.
All right. This is Of Ashes and Embers by Argo Wing. Cimmerian shade wraps the cloak across the remnants of day, the firmament teasing her glow, a bonfire burnt to embers and fanned out as if to warm the gale that caresses my bare shoulders. It is in this quiet, desolate place where music finds me, surrounded by murmured notes, night's tender nocturne entrances, veiled in shadows, the drums pulse beneath my toes, urging feral hips sway in matching staccato. Ancient echoes seek me out in the shadows. I dispel them with a smirk. There is no place for deja vu where music resides. I sense the cogs twisting, hinting at the turning of an era. So I take possession of the chorus, humming a new tune to overtake the first. Unleashing my voice, I feed the flames to lick at the ravages of darkness. End poem. And Faze, since you're new to the show, would you mind sharing your thoughts on this piece first?
I really like the word choices in this. Cimmerian and firmament, staccato. There's just such an excellent vocabulary here that helps create the images. And there's something about like the the warmth of the gale caressing the bare shoulders, that just makes you feel the poem the way sometimes you see it or smell it or, like, imagine it in different ways. I feel like the way that it's described lets you have a tactile kind of experience with this. I dispel them with a smirk. I really like that. I do not use the verb dispel very often, and now I'm like, oh, that's a word I need to use more. This is really well done. It has an elegance to it.
I really love that comment because you're right. It really is a tactile kind of poem. We have the senses of the gale force winds. We have the murmuring. We have the drums pulse beneath our toes. It really does kind of overtake the senses. So I really love that comment because it is so encompassing and overwhelming that it creates this grandeur. It reminds me much of a symphony and the way that you can feel the growth and the flow and the ebb and the flow within the songs. And this has that tactile feel of it. So I thought that was a stunning remark there, Faith. Thank you for that. And Pam, what did you think of this?
Well, first of all, that was a wonderful read. I always enjoy and appreciate Argo Wing's writing. She does have a beautiful use of imagery. I like how there's kind of this melancholy and haunting feel to this. I really like the line, veiled in shadows, the drums pulse beneath my toes, urging feral hips sway in matching staccato, ancient echoes seek me out in the shadows. There's this real idea of how beautiful and how magical that movement, that dance, that music is, and how it's always been an important part of the way we express ourselves. And the ending lines, unleashing my voice, I feed the flames to lick at the ravages of darkness. Really, there's a certain sense of empowerment and strength within these lines as a woman realizes the fulfillment of her own power. So just a magical rite and very well done.
That was such a beautiful comment, Pam. And I agree, there really is that fulfillment of a woman's own power. And Argo Wings really does kind of capture that, the way that she grows and she builds and she learns to take charge. There is that feeling at the beginning of the poem where she is just there. You know, she is wrapped in this cloak. She is the one who is teasing the glow of a bonfire, enjoying the caress of the gale. These are all things that are being done to her, things that she does not control. But towards the end of it, that's when we hear that she is taking possession of the chorus. She is feeling this change in the era. She is starting to hum a new tune and create things in her own voice. And that is when she feeds the flame and licks at the darkness, pushing it back. There really is that empowerment that comes with this piece throughout the progression of it. So I think that was a really awesome comment as well, because it delves into that other aspect of how she is much, if you will, like a phoenix bursting out of her own ashes. I think what's really fantastic about this is that we have that musical component. And I think of so often in the olden days, they say that there's only two real universal languages, music and mathematics, and this falls into that musical pit. It doesn't matter if you fully comprehend a song, you can still understand it, you can still feel it, and the way that it flows, and the way that it grows, and the way that it can leave us, the feel of our heart. Back when I was in high school, decades ago, unfortunately, I was in volleyball, and I remember I was at one of my team members' houses, and she made the comment that no music is really music unless it has lyrics. And I thought that was so unfortunate because I played in the orchestra and the symphony, but it was a very sad symphony compared to like a college symphony or a professional symphony. Anyway, so I thought that was really unfortunate, because having gotten to learn the violin and the piano and the other instruments that I've picked up along the way, what is so unfortunate is that you forget the power of just a tune. And I actually am thinking of you, FaZe, in this, because FaZe has this really awesome contest going on called the Beat Wars, where she provides you with music and you put your own lyrics to it. And the stuff that comes out of that is stunning. The different ways that people take on those pieces, the different ways that it's impacting people. Now, sometimes you can see like similar threads running through people, because let's be honest, you're not going to have a happy song in a minor chord, but you still have that beauty that comes from it, the way that it touches each individual human heart. And I agree with Pam on this. This does really speak of strength, of learning your worth, of growing from your worth. I appreciate that as she finds familiar ground, the ancient echoes seek me out in the shadows, and she dispels them with a smirk. It makes you wonder if before she might have been fearful, and that smirk has slowly grown until she understood where her own worth was. And then, of course, that's followed by, there is no place for deja vu where music resides. There's no place to say that this is just a repetition of something else. There's always the ability to find that new chorus, that new melody, or perhaps the harmony that's going to join it and create a new dynamic. There is those opportunities where we get to choose to change, and that is when those cogs start to turn and the era becomes something new, when we find our own worth and our own power and grow from it. I think that this is such a stunning piece, especially when we think of new beginnings, because sometimes new beginnings can be so scary. They can be big, and it can make us feel timid, because a lot of it is often unknown. But oftentimes, too, we can understand that we are stepping in with just as much power and strength as we wish when we find those new horizons. And she really captured that in this, choosing to say strength in this new beginning rather than something to be fearful of and shy away from. And I think that's really quite fantastic, especially after the 2 years of horror that the world has kind of had. Now we get to have this new world, this new year, that we can step forward with in strength and kind of direct and see how we can make it our own. So I thought this was really quite stunning. And up next, we're going to have A New Year by Latent Delight. And FaZe, would you mind reading this for us?
Sure. A New Year by Latent Delight. A new afoot, a year of the unknown, walking from a disaster of past into a beginning, alas. How many lessons must we learn? Yearn and burn. How many times must we survive, like a grave without a stone, in this world we call a home? Never quite feeling like it moves forward, only spins around and round. Gravity pulls on our senses, like a balloon left weathered and soiled in the ground. Progress is like a constant question, yet to be answered. We relapse on all our headway, or at least so it seems. The new year coming, rather than a new beginning, feels like a tottery fling. Hope may get the better of me, as it has so many moons before. Either way, the future is knocking upon our front door. And poem.
Oh, that was beautifully read, FaZe. Thank you so much. I think what I really appreciate about this is that it reminded me of those New Year's resolutions. It is those moments when we say, well, as of January 1st, I'm going to do all these things different. And I remember as a child, I used to make New Year's resolutions, and I really don't anymore. It's something that I've just long realized, that if I'm going to wait till the new year, it's just the same as like starting a diet. There's always going to be another Monday, and we always are going to push it off. And so I love this, because to me, it kind of calls out that New Year's resolution. The whole idea of the new year coming rather than a new beginning feels like a tottery fling. It's it's just something that we play around with. It's this idea that because January is here and we have this new year, now we can make changes. But really, we can make changes anytime. We can find those new beginnings when we choose to take those actions that lead down new paths. And so the question is, are you going to use the excuse of, well, I didn't meet my resolution, so we'll try again next year? Or are we going to find those times to say, you know, maybe this year didn't start off the way I wanted with those resolutions, but I can still make something out of this year? I feel like it really calls into question our ways of procrastination. So I thought it was quite fantastic. And it looks like Pam is away from the phone for a hot second. So Faze, would you mind telling me what you thought of this piece?
I agree with you. I think it kind of calls us out for using the new year as a time to kind of pretend that we're going to do things that maybe we're not, to fool ourselves as much as anyone, because there's kind of this pressure to, like, what are you going to do this year that's valuable? And like you say, you can start any time, but we use these artificial constructs as kind of frameworks of things. And I mean, in some ways, it's nice to have deadlines. You know, when a new year starts, it makes me reflect a little bit. But I've always thought of the school year as how I actually think of years starting. So for me, it starts in September. it doesn't quite work in January. I think that this poem does a good job at reminding us of this. How many lessons must we learn, yearn, and burn? How many times must we survive like a grave without a stone in this world we call home? So there's going to be lessons no matter what, and we need to learn from them all the time, not just this once-a-year thing. The future is knocking upon our door, whether we recognize it as a special time or not. I like the way that she put this together.
Oh, absolutely. And I love that your year really starts with the school year, because let's be honest, that's definitely a new beginning that I think everybody gets to reintroduce themselves, like genuinely, because New Year's, like, sure, you might kiss a fool, but you're still the same person you were 5 seconds ago. But in that new year, you have people coming in with their new looks and their new, I don't know, groups and their new clothes, and they get to reintroduce themselves. And I think that that is really quite a fantastic thought process, because it is genuinely a time where we get to see the change. We get to see how that person is going to be, and they get to make those decisions of how the year is going to flow. So I thought that was stunning, and I might just have to steal your outlook on what the real new year is. And it looks like Pam is back with us. Pam, did you get to hear that poem?
I didn't get to hear it, but unfortunately, I just haven't had time to read through it yet. But I do appreciate Leighton Delight contributing to the show, and I do look forward to reading her later.
Absolutely, and it is definitely worth a read. She actually had a few pieces that I looked through for this show, and all of them are really quite stellar. So I was really excited that she gave us permission to read this, because it's just kind of a fun moment of the year. All right, up next we're going to have some Butterfly Summer by Elle Wants Wings, 1, 2, 3. And Pam, would you give this a read?
Absolutely, I would be happy to. All right, and let me get back and. All right, let's see here. Butterfly Summer by Elle Wants Wings, 1, 2, 3. And it goes like this. God, please give me wings this summer. Hold open the door for me. Had enough of this colorless color. Caterpillars breaking free of kissing people I don't know. Handing out free samples of beautiful through screens, having dreams about a man I'll never know. Butterfly summer, fly me away, burst old hurts into colors that put winter and spring to shame. Pull down all of the scaffolds. I will bake my own happy and more into wings that I'll flutter. Butterfly summer, cocoon all your broken, break free to another and soar. End poem.
Beautifully read, Pam. Thank you so much for that. And Faze, would you start us off with your thoughts on this?
Yeah. I liked the line, handing out free samples of beautiful. That's a really cool line. I also like burst old hurts into colors that put winter and spring to shame. The idea of turning your old pain into art and to be moving on into something that is brighter when everything kind of felt dull and monochromatic before, as we saw in the colorless color in the first stanza. I really like that concept of bursting old hurts into colors.
That was a really beautiful comment, and I agree. I think that there really is quite a beautiful concept here, the way that you can have something old bring out something new and something beautiful still. So often when we think of aging, we think of the dulling and the fraying of pictures and paintings and all those kinds of things, but to have it burst into these colors create something really beautiful that makes us stop and think that perhaps there's something to be appreciated in that. And Pam, what did you think of this?
I thought this was a beautiful brevity with some really creative use of language. I really like how she says a colorless color, like the whole idea of that everything feels so empty, it doesn't even feel like what it's supposed to be. There's this real melancholy feel to this, a real sadness to it. But at the same time, a sense of hope, especially in the extended metaphor and the imagery of breaking out of the cocoon, of becoming a new person, you know, of finding a new sense of self. So really just a wonderful write and very well done.
I really love that thought, that when we burst out of these unknowns, when we to digress just a tiny bit, but when we are uncertain of ourselves, when we feel like we've lost ourselves and the core of who we are, the world really can seem like just this blur of hazy grays and browns. There really is that kind of colorless color because there's nothing definitive and beautiful and bright about it. But when we get to discover ourselves, when we get to reimagine who we are and break out of those cocoons and have that self-discovery, it really does open up the door of new possibilities. And I feel like that was really beautifully captured here, starting off melancholy, but ending with that hope to break free to another and soar. I think that was such a stunning comment, Pam, because I think it really drills down into the heart of it. What I really love is that metaphor, this hope of the unknown, the idea of not quite being sure of what's going to happen, but knowing that so much that they've seen is a facade. You can have people who are kissing. You can have things that are said that they are beautiful, but they are all manufactured, and they don't always tell the truth. They don't always tell the story. And so I like that in this, there's that plea, God, please give me wings this summer. In this summer, do not make me stay in this place where I am unseen and I am unknown. And instead, they want to have this butterfly summer to fly away, to feel the beauty of these colors and put winter and spring to shame. And I love that. I love that. That whole phrase gives me goosebumps because I think of winter as just this gorgeous time. Even though, you know, everything's covered in snow, there's still a true beauty that comes to it in so many different ways. And then, of course, spring with the vibrancy of new life. Yeah, put that to shame. And that idea, that image of putting that to shame, the beauty of the wings, the way that they glow and catch the light almost like stained glass. Of course, Vinny says, I will bake my own happy and more into wings that I will flutter, butterfly summer, cocoon all your broken, break free to another and soar. And it makes me think, too, of the metamorphosis of a butterfly. You have that caterpillar that cocoons itself within the chrysalis. But it's important that as they break free of that, that you don't touch them because they have to have that hard moment of breaking their wings out and drying them so that they'll actually have the strength to fly. It's something that so often we kind hearts want to aid in, but it's actually a death sentence if we did. And so I love that that they speak about this process of, yeah, this is painful and yeah, this is hard, but the end is so worth it. We'll get to put winter and spring to shame. We will get to go and fly and soar and break free from the facades and the beauty that we are told is all life is made of, and get to be something more and something greater and see a perspective that those that are stuck on the ground do not. I think it's really quite just a stunning rite. And I'm so thankful again that they let us read this. And I know so often I'm like, that was a really stunning rite, but I do really feel like there are some amazing rites that people let us read. And these have just been no exception. They really have their own ideas, their own concepts, their own imagery that I think is just so overwhelmingly beautiful that kind of leaves you to stop and think and even reflect on your own life. And I think that's where you really see good poetry, is when you get to stop and reflect on how this is reflected in your own life and you connect with it. So my two cents, not that they're worth anything. But up next, we are going to have Forgiveness by Doc Frank, and I'll give this one a read. Forgiveness. As I drew a card from the Archangel deck, I was apprehensive until I saw its message. Forgiveness for all who may have offended you. It's such a liberating feeling of relief and joy, too. If you think about it, it's a gift of ultimate love, cleansing and removing stress you've carried too long. Wiping the slate clean, a relationship anew, exhilarating release of pent-up resentments, too. I was so glad to pull that card, gave me new lease on life. New day started, patched up lives. What a wonderful feeling to forgive. While at it, I asked the Lord to forgive me. End poem. And Pam, what did you think of this piece?
Well, I thought this was a beautiful rite. I thought it had a nice spiritual undertone in the last lines. I really like how he mentioned, to me, I get the idea that forgiveness isn't only about loving other people, but it's about loving yourself as well. Because a lot of times the benefits of forgiveness are our own, to ourselves. You know, I mean, there are times when we've wronged somebody and we can patch up a relationship by saying sorry and showing that we're sorry. But sometimes, you know, we simply just, you know, like have to forgive somebody who hasn't asked for it and is never going to ask for it, simply because we need to move on. We need to work through the process of healing. And I like this all the way through, but I'm particularly drawn to the second stanza. That was beautifully written and very well done.
Oh, that was such a beautiful comment, Pam. And you're right. Forgiveness is one of those things that is so hard, but it also is that gift. It is through forgiveness that we get to let things continue. Even if they require a change, we get to continue those relationships, but we get to unburden ourselves of holding that within ourselves, holding that hurt. It makes me think of one of my favorite phrases, which is, don't let people live in your head rent-free, because there have been plenty of people who have harmed me, but it doesn't cost them anything. In fact, this is one of the stupidest things, and it is currently living in my head rent-free. But I purchased a house last year, more than a year ago, November of 2020. Yeah, November of 2020. And where I live near a lake, but I do not live on a lake. It's literally two blocks down, you go into a whole lake kind of thing. But I'm not directly on it, just very close proximity. And over the summer, I got a letter that they were starting a new tax to keep the lake clean. And it was like just after the extended tax deadline, and I was not up for like researching it. So I just kind of ignored it, which I shouldn't have done, but I did. And then in October, I found out that I had been assessed 1 square foot of lakefront property, and I am now going to be taxed $4 a year on it, which is like probably a really stupid thing to let live in my head rent free. But I researched it, and I don't own that square foot. The way that they're assessing it is based off of land that was divided back in 1928. But I don't have any rights to this area that they're claiming that I do. It's just because of the name of the lot of land that I own. And so I went before the board, and I pleaded my case, and I got an email, or not really an email, but I got a letter while I was in Colorado. So I missed it just in its entirety, and I missed the deadline to contest it, where they said that me not knowing about that property does not mean that I should be exempt from this tax. And it is my job to prove that I have, even though there's nothing on my property that even says that I have these rights, it is my job to legally prove that that those rights were taken away from me through a legal process. And it's $4. But long story short, that forgiveness, choosing to let it go, choosing to let those $4 go, is that forgiveness, that it unburdens me. It doesn't hurt them for me to be caught up and frustrated with them, but it hurts me. And so forgiveness is that beautiful process, not just of ultimate love for others, but also ultimate love for ourselves. So long story short, I love that you're drawn to that stanza, because I too am drawn to that stanza. But Faith, what did you think of this?
Well, I agree with you both that it has, like, a liberating feeling is what it says. It's a relief, and it has that exhilarating release of pent-up resentment. I think those are the key parts of this poem because, like you both said, it's about healing yourself as well as the person that you're forgiving. I really liked exhilarating as a choice there, because it's not just like you've let it go and now it's not haunting you. It's a sense of sudden freedom of like, wow, it's like you've been holding your breath and you didn't even realize it. And now you're taking a breath for the first time. And it's like, whoa. I like that idea of wiping the slate clean and just starting fresh in your relationships, in everything. Even if you don't have a connection with them anymore, you no longer have that negative connection. So I thought this had a nice feel for the beginning of the year to have that fresh, clean slate.
And that was such an awesome comment too, that idea of wiping the slate, not necessarily for relationships that need to be let go, but for your own sanity, for your own sake, decluttering the burdens that you keep in your mind and your heart. I think that was just a stunning and insightful comment. Thank you for that. And thank you, Doc Frank, for allowing us to read that. Up next, I have New Hope by Simon Guest. And Faith, would you give this one a read?
Sure. New Hope by Simon Guest. Alone in a forest of fire, there is no fight left. This is the end of a destructive path. Death will take away, yet out of the ashes, life shall burst, bringing a new hope. End poem.
Beautifully read, Faith. It does look like Pam has dropped for a little bit. So if she is headed off to bed, I hope that she has the best night. And thank you for joining us. And so on to the poem. I think what was so stunning about this is that it's a reminder that destruction does not always mean the end of things. There's a really fun group that I hang out with. And while I'm not really one who understands or partakes in like tarot reading, what I love is the insight that they provide. And there's a friend in the group who has had just a really, really hard rough year. And one of the girls who partakes in like the tarot reading stuff, she beautifully reminded her that it was a way for those things that while they were good and while they mattered to her, them leaving her life is a way to open up to new opportunities and better things. And I feel like this poem really kind of captures it. It captures that hope of better things, even though there is destruction that comes with it, even though it is hard to see what we are standing in after knowing what was once there. Sometimes that destruction gives way to something better and brighter that we would never have gotten to see and would never know of if we had not lost that first. So I think this is really quite a stunning brevity because it makes us stop and think and reflect on how we have found ourselves in utter devastation and be reminded that good things, beautiful things can come from it. And what did you think, Faze, having read it?
I like it. It has that feel of a phoenix, which is one of my favorite mythological creatures. And, you know, they burn up, but then there's something even more fresh and beautiful as the little baby phoenix comes out. There's always that hope of something good coming out. And I like that it talks about a forest of fire, because as awful as forest fires are, and I've certainly experienced them, a natural forest fire, if the land is able to go properly the way that it's supposed to every now and then, actually is really good for the land, because the ashes and everything helps the forest go. It gets rid of everything that's dead, and then that stuff nourishes the land, and new things grow really well. It's just when they get out of control that it's a problem. That's usually humans' fault. So the forest of fire, it sounds like an intimidating thing, but actually sometimes by getting rid of stuff that that we don't need, it ends up giving new opportunities. So I really like the way that he used that as a metaphor for life.
Well, that was such a stunning remark too, Faze. I actually, as I was finishing my own comment, really did think of, like you, those forest fires, other than the ones that we see in like California, which just devastate everything. There is a natural process of the fresh burning, which puts the nutrients into the soil, which allows the new growth to happen. It doesn't ever get hot enough to kill the trees because they're just, the bark protects them. But because we either don't allow that underbrush to happen, or, you know, there's just the world is super, super dry and hot, or just all these other things, that's where you have those real damages that don't allow that new life to come from it. But sometimes that destruction is necessary. So that was a beautiful comment. Thank you for sharing that, Faze. All right, and up next, I have Dreaming of a Different Life by Sherry Ann, and I'll give this one a read. Dreaming of a Different Life by Sherry Ann. The animated dream in my head is the life I lead when night ends. Not today's city, ungrooming reality of honking horns and caddy-faring melodies. I live in a yellow brick house at the ocean's edge with my one true love. Daydream video scenes roll inside, sand and surf expand, filling the bay, breathtaking sights of blue and gold, watching monarch butterflies flitter play, drunkenly landing on garden pales and bougainvillea coils on lattice walls, while salty breeze styles my hair. Idyllic days with pink sunlit morns, sipping coffee from my sleepy red cup. Every day, adventures on the Atlantic, hand in hand with my bestie, cheese sandwiches and flip-flops, sea salt and fishing rods, flying sand in my squinting eyes. I've surrendered to wanting it all, and what's involved, breaking down and building back, reopening my heart to being hurt, the discomfort of compromise, struggling to understand who I am, swimming towards ocean sunsets, and you, passion awaits, breathing in my dreams. End poem. And Faith, would you start us off with what you thought of this piece?
I like how it gets into the daydream kind of life, but then it grounds it again, and it recognizes that in order to get to the life you want, you have to make yourself vulnerable. Reopening my heart to being hurt, the discomfort of compromise. You know, there's something about when you have that reawakening kind of moment, when you decide that you're going to make changes, that you're going to put yourself out there for success, you do have to risk things not going perfectly. You know, loving someone can be painful. You put yourself at risk when you start something new, but that's how you get something of value, swimming towards ocean sunsets and you, and knowing that you have to do that difficult swim to get to that island, to get to that life that goes beyond just a fantasy. You do have to put yourself at risk and work for it. So I think this is a really realistic view of a new beginning, even though it does have that whimsical fantasy feel for most of it.
I love that comment, because so often we have these ideas of what the perfect world is like, what the perfect life is like, and it doesn't always end out that way, because we don't get to have those perfections, we don't get to have those ideals until we've been through those harder moments, until we've put ourselves out there, attempted something that we weren't quite prepared for, welcomed the hurt. I also love that the impression I get is that currently she's living within the city and she's dreaming of living somewhere else, you know, being in this beach, feeling the salty air, having their best friend with them day by day. And I had to giggle because in many ways it sounds fantastic. And I do, you know, I did it. At one point I lived 5 miles from a beach. I still have a home in Daytona Beach. 5 miles from the beach, but I never want to go back there. And it's a reminder that even when one of the hurts that we can face is that even when we get the ideal, even when we found that person, sometimes our perfect is not their perfect. Sometimes what they think is the idea for the future is not our idea for the future, in which case then have that idea of compromise and that hump of pain that we have to get over to determine if this is really the end-all be-all or if we keep waiting and keep hoping and keep dreaming. What I really loved about this, though, is that it has that really airy feel to it. It has that beauty. It has the warmth. After starting us off in something that in London may be a little colder and a little bit more frigid, there's this beauty and this detail that she is living in her dreams. And I think that's such a beautiful way to capture it, this dreaming of a different life, but also that hope of one day having it in our grasp, even if it takes those pains and those hurts to get there. I thought the imagery was just stunning, and you can so easily get caught up in this reality of the daydream, because it's not some place that seems unachievable, but perhaps just a shift in location. It's attainable. It can be real. It is realistic and it's beautiful in its detail. And I think that she kind of captures us in her own daydream, even if it's not our perfect little paradise. It's just a really beautiful write. And up next we have From Light to Dark by Joanna Stratford. And Dave, would you give this one a read?
Yes. Do you have a headset on, like with a microphone?
I do.
You're starting to sound like a robot, or maybe it's my phone. I don't know.
Oh, no. Okay. I'm going. I hate Bluetooth. Okay, let me, while you're reading, I'm going to hang up and call right back in.
Okay. From Dark to Light. This is a poem by Joanna Stratford. and they couldn't see him. Now, no matter how brightly he burned, not even within his remarkable golden hue of orange, red, and blue. And these burning feathers ablaze with the darling of night, entwined and dancing on a wick of candle's flame, a reminiscing of a time he existed there within this place. They knew him only by name, now buried and left in shame within a place that should be forgotten. At that time, he reluctantly allowed them to keep him locked within the shadow of a past that had not one positive thing to do with his life anymore or his rebirth. And because of their lack of belief, he wrestled there with the idea of a new beginning. And this new beginning of sorts was worthy such a venture. But now he was rising above with the awakening that his light was not meant for any of them to see. And his soul was not meant for any of them to keep. He was free now from the judging and the accusations and the pain of that world that chose to be left in vain. That was his second chance granted by a God that he felt did not exist, was the one who took his hand in his. Out of mind and out of sight, he was changing from dark to light. Out of mind and into flight, he was now a part of the miracle of flight. Out of mind and out of sight, he was changing from dark to light. In this forgiving place, his soul changed from dark to light, and he burned brightly as the stars in the sky, and he soared and glided way up high. He was free now. He was finally soaring free. Within this place of rebirth, they were too blind to see. And without restraint, he found himself, leaving the world breathless from the ashes he left behind. And of those who did not believe in him or what he was truly capable of, he was amazed at the new journey that awaited him up ahead. Our soul, one light, set your intentions from within to bring forth your intended blessings like the flaming phoenix awakening from the embers of rebirth. And with death comes enlightenment. Within this place, when they finally awaken, setting for this first flight, within this new and old ability to change from dark to light, remember you all have the ability to burn brightly, like a phoenix, as long as you believe in your light. End poem.
Beautifully read, babe. And do I sound better now?
I think so. Say something again.
Something.
You sound better to me.
Not to be cheeky. So, and thank you for letting me know that. I love and hate technology because it's like 9 times out of 10 it works, but like the one time that it doesn't is just like, oh. I even bought a whole new phone so I wouldn't have to like keep having my phone was randomly hanging up, and you know it would like, I don't know, it would say that I'm on the air but nobody could hear me, and so oh good Lord, headset now. Okay, anyways. Back on. I think what I really loved about this is that first and foremost, we have the phoenix. And I won't lie, I may or may not have asked you to read this one because you mentioned previously that you like phoenixes. So, you know, I love you and I wanted to give you something you love. But what I really loved about this is that it kind of shows the opportunity for rebirth, even when you think yourself something dark. And to me, that really struck me personally because and honestly, I think any person who grew up in the millennial generation went through a stage because we were like, you know, we were gothic. And then, of course, emos came out with the millennial generation, the younger millennial generation. But we had a very dark, at least from my experience, there was a lot of like beauty in the darkness. I mean, there was like The Underworld and Queen of the Damned and Interview with the Vampire and Blade. And there was just a lot of dark movies that we romanticized. And so cliche, me, for a very long time was like, I have a darkness. It is my darkness. And I connected with it. And it was a side of me that was just recognized. And the way I tried to coin it was that it recognized that life doesn't always have a silver lining. Sometimes things just suck. And for me, it was that taking off of the rose-tinted glasses of the world is beautiful and great and everybody's going to work for you. And I think anybody who lives through some of the events that my generation has lived through, you know, the housing bubble, 9/11, gosh, just a lot of stuff, the anthrax scares. There's kind of this jadedness. And so when they are speaking about their darkness turning to light, it's that reminder that we don't have to be defined by our darkness. And I remember what it was like when I shed the metaphorical cloak of my darkness, and how freeing that was. And this reminds me of that. This reminds me of those beginnings when we recognize that we do not have to be defined by jadedness, by anger, by sadness, by moodiness, by anything that has been letting us live a life that is less than what we've wanted. And I appreciate, too, this idea where they said, let's see if I can quickly find it. This was a second chance granted by a God that he felt did not exist, was the one who took his hand in his. It's a reminder that even when we don't believe in it, not that there's any, you know, it's not my job to tell people that there's only one faith. It's not anybody's job to try and, I don't think anybody's job to try and convert people. But I'm a Christian and I was raised Christian, but during a very dark time in my life, I really doubted that there was a God that loved me. And so I think that it's very impactful when you find something that maybe you didn't believe in it, maybe you did and just lost hope, but when you find something that kind of reignites the good in you, the light in you, that can be faith, that can be love, that can be kids, that could be a cat. For me, it's snakes. I love snakes. But finding that opportunity to find light, finding that thing that just kind of shows you that you don't have to be dark and dreary, that you don't have to be defined by your past, that you don't have to be defined by the events that have revolved around your life, shaping how people interact and speak to each other and care for each other. We can all leave the darkness. We can all be something more. We can all have a second or third or fourth or fifth or 26th chance. There's still always those hopes. And I think that this is such a stunning piece that kind of captures that hope of being more, of seeing more, and coming from something that seemed hopeless to find something greater and brighter. So I thought it was just a brilliant write. And what do you think, Faith?
I liked the third stanza where it talks about reluctantly allowed them to keep him locked within the shadows of a past. And so sometimes you kind of let your old self define you, and you don't really correct it when people think that you are who you used to be. He doesn't feel that he had the same connection to who he was. It has not one thing to do with his life anymore, but people still see him that way. Maybe his family or old friends who don't see the new him still consider him to be a part of that. And he's like, that's not really me anymore. I don't know, something about that third stanza really stuck out to me as recognizing if you are locked in that past, and maybe don't allow people to see the wrong version of you anymore.
That was such a beautiful comment. In fact, it's really funny that you say that because I just watched the movie today, Encanto. Have you gotten to see that one?
Yes.
And your comment just, like, reminded me of that. Because, like, the whole time Mirabella is kind of viewed as, like, you know, just not good enough to be in the pictures, and she didn't get a gift and all this stuff. But, and even like, her sister Isabella, right, I think it was Mirabella and Isabella. Anyways, I think what I really loved about it is, like, Isabella is supposed to be perfect, and yet she's, here she is redefining herself by growing cacti. And your comment reminds me of that, because it's just a reminder that we don't have to be defined by the image that people see us as. We don't have to be defined by what we've always done. We can be something new, we can be something greater, and we can be what we want to be, and people will see us for it. It's probably a really silly, like, comment to comment on yours, but your comment just really struck that chord with me, because I think what's so stunning is when we can actually be seen as we wish, as we truly innately are, that's when we really get to find the joy and the peace and the beauty of life that we otherwise might not have gotten to see. So just my two cents. I loved your comment. All right, up next. Sorry, were you going to say something? I don't want to cut you off.
Oh, sorry. I was muted, but I was just going to say thanks, and that I liked that movie, too. I don't even have kids, and I still watch all the Disney movies.
So the really funny thing is Sundays I get up with the girls. I have my two-year-old. She's almost three. She's never been a good sleeper. And we've been struggling with definitely, like, a sleep regression, which is kind of normal because she's starting to speak more sentences, solid sentences, all that kind of stuff. So she hasn't slept great for the last two nights. But every Sunday I get up with the girls, and it's the day for my husband to sleep in. And so I got up with the girls today, and we had pancakes and sausages for breakfast, took the dog out. There is a little resentment in my voice when it comes to the dogs, but that's a whole nother story. And then we get downstairs, and I looked at my girls and I said, you know, it snowed. So I was like, do you want to watch Frozen? And my youngest is like, yeah. And my eldest goes, no. And I pull up the thing. I pull up the Disney Plus, and she goes, mommy, I want to watch that one. And she looked at Encanto. And so I pulled it up, and we started watching it. We got 20 minutes in, and my husband comes downstairs, and he kind of stops, and he looks at us, and he was like, you are not watching that without me. So we had to actually restart the whole Disney movie because he got salty that he didn't get to see the first 20 minutes of it. You know, heavily tattooed ex-military man wanted to watch a Disney movie. I was like, yeah, this is my life. I wouldn't have it any other way. All right. Up next, I have The Waters Embraced by Bill Desk, and I will give this one a read. I stand on the edge of where I've always been as I find myself once again, and although the future feels so close, it stretches far beyond my sight. I'm about to walk off the shore and carry myself into the unknown as the sky climbs forever empty and the sea flows with freedom. Ahead, I see where I can go, and behind me all the steps I've taken. So as I walk with my back to the wind, I welcome the waters embraced. End poem. And Faze, would you start us off with your thoughts?
I really enjoy the nature imagery. The idea of being at the edge of the water really does feel like a new beginning, or at a border, or kind of a crossroads type thing, where the sea meets the land, and it seems like the sky meets the ground just when it's a big stretch of water, and all you can see is the sky. There's a sort of freedom, but at the same time, like, a sense of, like, choice, which direction are you going to go? I mean, you don't really have that much choice because you can't really just walk out into the water, but for most people anyway. But it feels like you need to do something. I don't know. There's something about nature that is empowering, but also I can't even think of the word. It's it's exhilarating in a way. It sparks something in you. It can be relaxing, but it can also be like, look at that horizon. What is out there? I got to go do something. But walking with your back to the wind, welcoming the water's embrace, it feels like you're going in the right direction there. Because when you're walking against the wind and it's pushing against you and it's just like, wow, I don't know if this is the way that I should be going, this has the contrast of that. It's the wind is at your back. You're being kind of like edged forward, and the water is embracing you. There's something beautiful about the way that this is described. It's very brief, but it creates quite the image.
That was such an awesome comment. And you actually reminded me earlier today, which I can't blame them. Earlier today, in a little moment of lull where I got some time to myself, I was watching TikTok, and there was this person who's just like walking through the forest, and they get to like a little hole in the ground, and they kneel down, and you could tell like it was a little hole too, because like as they stepped in, the snow like kind of crumpled and caved in and all that kind of stuff, and you could tell that they were squatting down. But they found a cave in the middle of a forest in the middle of winter, and they stop for a moment. They go, "Ooh, oh wow, look at this." They're like, "Should I go in?" And it's, you have this moment of being like, you probably shouldn't explore a cave in the middle of winter, in the middle of the forest by yourself. But at the same time, it's like, but I totally, you know, they're like, I'm going to go in, you know, and then they go, how far back should I go? But it's that sense, it's the sense of both being fearful for this person, because you know that it could be very dangerous. You know that it could be, and that's part of that awe-inspiring. It could be dangerous. It could be so much. It's beautiful, but it's also deadly. I mean, you think of the ocean and I think of riptides. And there's a beauty in them, but at the same time, there's also that desire to be adventurous. It's that desire to go explore and see something new and be the adventurer who discovers something. And it too reminded me, same TikTok reminded me that if you find a cave, and I think this is just the United States, I don't know about other countries, but if you find a cave that's never been named and it qualifies for a cave of having at least 50 feet permanent darkness, then it's a cave, and you can have it named, much like finding a star that's never been found before. You can name a cave. And so your comment really reminds me of that desire to go and explore and see and find the unknown, but at the same time, the awe of just soaking it in, be it the fear that holds us back or the majesty of it. But it's both that call and that will to protect ourselves. I think that was such a stunning comment. What I really loved about this is that so often when we think of, at least when I think of water, I think of floating. And I've had the enjoyable, and it was enjoyable experience of actually swimming in the middle of the ocean. I was on a cruise line called Barefoot Cruises. They're not around anymore. But they were old sailboats, huge, like things that you would expect people to like cross the ocean in way in the olden days, the three-masted boats. And one of the fun things is that every day they had a little like stair thing that went down the side of the ship, but they would open up the railing and you could jump off the ship into the middle of the ocean. And so it was one of the coolest experiences. I actually got to swim with sharks just that swam into the area. But it was such a cool experience because you're just kind of out there in the middle of the blue. And I still distinctly remember diving under the waters, and it felt like I could dive far enough to touch the ocean floor, but it was too deep for me to actually touch the ocean floor without scuba gear or anything like that. And I remember just kind of floating there. I ended up getting a second-degree burn on my back, a second-degree sunburn on my back, because I'm fairly pale, as much as I don't always like to admit it. I got it in about 30 minutes. But it's because I loved the idea of just kind of floating actually on my stomach and with my goggles on, just looking around at the vastness of the ocean. It was almost directionless, other than the obvious floor below me where I watched like an octopus crawl along the floor or some fish swim by. It was pretty vast. And there was both this moment of utter peace of just watching this blue and like pale yellow sand continue on versus also the fear of, you know, sharks are in the water. And we had been told many, many times that there were a lot of bull shark attacks going on that year, because this was in the Caribbean. And so this kind of reminds me of that, the welcomingness, the warmness, the buoyant lack of care, and yet also that being on edge. So often when we walk along those beaches, when we're crawling over rocks, we understand the limits of ourselves. We have to be physically involved in those. We've been there before. We know how to walk. We know how to run. We know how to climb. But at the same time, while we know how to swim, there is that newness to the ocean. There is that opportunity of finding something unknown. There is the freedom that comes because there's not much for you to do in the middle of the ocean but sink or float or swim. It takes away all the things that we have to do. And often, you know, you can't fight the current. And so I loved this, the water's embrace. It feels like giving over our own wants and desires, letting the currents take us where they were, enjoying it for what it is, while also understanding that there's a bit of fear or apprehension there as we float along, not knowing what we would encounter. Is that idea of exploring things in a way that we have never explored them before and giving up all the controls that we seem to think make us safe, but sometimes just restrict us from finding something new and great. And here at the end, with the wind to our back, we embrace that water. We embrace the float. We embrace the idea that we don't always need to be in control. And that too offers itself to that new beginning, learning that sometimes we just need to let go. For such a brief poem, I think this is such a remarkable piece. And at least for me, it brought back a lot of really fun memories that made me connect with them in a deeper way. So I thought this was remarkable. And up next, I have Waving Goodbye to Blue Skies by Papa Terminus. And Faze, would you give this one a read?
Of course. As soon as it loads. Here we go. Waving Goodbye to Blue Skies by Papa Terminus. We cry freedom over the Serengeti, where the lions roar and the African rains pour. We stand tall, steadfast, and justified, with our broken wings, burnt offerings, wafting through a hurricane on the Bering Sea. Snow squalls breaking the ceiling send us reeling back to the cradle. Like babies, we're rocked asleep, like Bonnie and Clyde, taking our last stand, all guns blazing. Dawn breaks over the desert on a road to nowhere, thirsty for the rains from Africa, to splash upon parched lips and hollow eyes. Goodbye, blue skies. We can't see past the storm. End poem.
This is such a beautiful, beautiful poem. And that was a fantastic read, Faze. Thank you for that. What I really love about this is that I feel like this really kind of captures the picture. And for those that can't see the poem, it's this beautiful picture of a hot air balloon, a rainbow kind of going across it, beautiful skies. And then, of course, these majestic mountains and some valleys below over perhaps like an inlet for where the river meets the ocean. But what I love about this is that it reminds us that oftentimes, we think that life is good when we're doing the free sailings. We think that because we can see all this beauty below us, that life is good and we don't want it to be disrupted. And yeah, having gone through two hurricanes, I would not want to go through any more. It's why I left Florida. And it does restrict us when we're stuck in the middle of these storms, when we don't know where we're going, when we're kind of at the whim of the winds, and we aren't even sure how high up or how far down we are or if we're even going to make it. There's that fear and that farewell, this idea of going out, perhaps this is the end. We can have those new beginnings that do not start calmly. And again, it reminds me of what we read earlier about, and I believe it was Simon Guest, of in New Hope, of having that destruction that comes. Sometimes, as much as that is an end to a chapter, it is always the beginning of a new one. That devastation is that in between, that shifting of the tides. And this reminds me of that. That destruction does not have to be an end. It can be a beginning. It can be those moments where it provides the rain for parched lips. Perhaps it brings in the fear of the unknown. Perhaps it sets out the fires that have been invading and encroaching our areas. Sometimes that destruction, sometimes those storms can be the beginning. They don't have to be the end. And so that for that, I thought that this was just really quite remarkable. The reminder that the skies are gone and that we don't know where we're going, but there can still be good in it. And it doesn't always mean the end, even if it's a little scary to begin with. So I thought it was really quite a remarkable piece. And Faze, what did you think of this?
I saw it as like the blue skies going away can be a good thing, because when it's too hot, like it is in the Serengeti, and they're thirsty for the rains, then sometimes those clouds coming is joy. You know, what other people may curse is a blessing for others. It all depends on the circumstances. So I think this is just kind of talking about how, something that is a beginning for you might not be the same for everyone, and that rain could be an amazing thing that means that, you know, their gardens will grow, that they'll have the water that they need. I mean, I know that with the forest fires that we had here this year, when it rained, everyone was dancing in the streets. Like, it was just like, yes, we were so happy that it rained. It says in the AN that this is about handling PTSD, and that it has the highs and lows, and how to deal with that. So I think the variations in the weather can be representation of the kind of mood swings that we can have as well. And blue is often associated with depression, so maybe getting rid of the blue skies is putting the depression away, even though that usually blue skies are associated with happiness. There's maybe a different perspective there.
That is really beautifully... you got to be kidding me. Oh, my gosh. I think my headset just died. Okay, hold on.
Hold on.
Switching.
I hear
switching
you.
Over. Switching over to speaker. Hold on. Okay, can you still hear me, Faze?
Yes.
Let's try that again. Can you hear me? I think I got it.
I hear you.
Okay. I think you can hear me. I think I just got on speaker because I heard you like put yourself on mute. So I'm going to assume that all is good in this world and I'm just having all the technical difficulties of my life tonight.
We're good here.
Oh, good. So what I really appreciate about what your comment said too is that there are a lot of times when the rain is good. You know, when there was dancing in the streets around you guys because you were having so many fires. And I didn't really have fires this year, but the year prior there were fires around my parents. And I remember I would actually wear like one of those fume masks that you wear when you're doing like construction stuff or working with resin, because the air was so full of ash that it hurt to breathe. And so, yeah, I agree. Like, there are those moments where there's rain. But what I really appreciated was you actually mentioned his author's note. I didn't read that before, but you actually reminded me of something that my husband and I are working through at this moment for him. So we've gotten him a new therapist. My husband is a 100% totally and permanently disabled veteran for a plethora of reasons, including PTSD. And we actually just had the discussion of, is he having, and I don't really know how to explain it, but he has psychosis, which acts a lot like schizophrenia. So when he's having a really bad episode, he actually starts hearing voices. And there are times throughout the day where he would hear voices and he hides it really, really well. But he has that audio experience of psychosis that comes with his PTSD. And this discussion has come about because they've just put him on a brand new medication that helps his depression because he's also bipolar. So it helps kind of bring down his mania, and the depression, antidepressants help kind of be a little bit more stable, and it stopped the voices in his head. But the problem is that now it's causing cardiac issues. And so I appreciate you reading that author's note, because PTSD is a lot more than I think what some people understand. It's not just these traumatic events that they relive, but it's those little ways that it creeps into their lives that they just have to learn to cope with. And it's no wonder that it was called shell shock, because it's those different ways that aren't necessarily just a flashback of losing yourself, but it's those lows of having them question if I can hear other people. Like, so my husband will ask me, you know, Victoria, do you hear those noises? Is there someone outside? And I have to remind him, no, I don't. And it's not audio, it's not visual, it's just these audio hallucinations. But it's those little ways that create those lows, that create those storms. And sometimes there are things that they've been living with for so long that you don't know until now that the storm is kind of nice. To me, it's those med balancings, changing the meds, finding the ones that work. Because obviously him having chest pains is not a good thing. So we're in this storm trying to find it. We see the rains. We see the good because these are positive. They're positively impacting him. But there's also still that unknown because we have the lightning of the chest pains, and it's terrifying. And so I'm really thankful both for your comment and for reading that author's note, because it does bring that new dimension that lets us appreciate that new beginnings can be rough, that even if you've been dealing with this hot air balloon of PTSD for so long, it doesn't mean that it's always going to be smooth sailing. Sometimes things stop working. Sometimes you find out that there's something that's been untreated. And with it comes its own new rolling and tumbling and terrifying moments. So thank you for that, Faith. Long story short, thank you for that.
His meds haven't figured out, so it's a tough thing.
I appreciate that. We'll get it figured out. There's gonna be good stuff coming. That's what I keep telling myself. Okay. The last poem that we have tonight is a piece submitted by Poetic Picasso, and it's called I Yearn to Be, and I'll give this a read. I yearn to be always in magical meadows of the sapphire hills, amidst the natural beauty there of the settling of the countryside, where I drench myself in the scent of the ivory magnolias, the amethyst lavenders, the blueberry hyacinths, the emerald clovers, and the lemon roses then. I wish I could travel upon the indigo and pearly clouds above, within the celestial hue of a myriad of rainbow colors, and let my wings feel the winds of the touch of serenity, sleeping in the gentle arms of the bosom of Mother Nature. I could bask in the amber sun and let its rays soothe my soul until it tickled enough my caramel skin to want to bathe in the rain. But let me dance before the orchestra of the angelic choir, singing wonderful harmonies from the blue topaz sky. I seem to dream a lot about the kaleidoscope heaven upon earth, where I could be a child once more, to enjoy a realm of my imagination and remember the jovial days of love and life with my felicity. As I think about the moments, I walk through the portal of time, Everything has beauty, but not everyone can see it. What I witness with my eyes, a memorable place I call heaven. End poem. And Faze, would you start us off with your thoughts on this?
This is really beautiful. I like the images of nature. I like the color choices that he has, that it's amethyst, not just purple, that some things are described as like blueberry or lemon, which adds a whole new dimension to the color because you associate it with those smells and tastes. And lemon roses is not the traditional rose that you would think of, so that having that detail is really important. I like that he talks about where is it here? Let its rays soothe my soul until it's tickled enough my caramel skin to want to bathe in the rain. The idea that the sun tickles you and then you need that contrast of the rain. So like we were talking about in the last poem, you need that shift in the weather, you need that shift in your attitude sometimes to get through life. There's this desire for the changeover from the heat of the sun and to the rain. And then to have that sound in there too, the orchestra of angelic choir. So we've used our eyes, we've smelled the flowers, we've heard the songs. He really engages your senses in this poem.
Oh, he absolutely does. And I say that yet again, Frank kind of lives up to his pen name, Poetic Picasso, because his words always paint these vibrant pictures. And so I love that you pointed those out, that the lavender isn't just purple or like a pale purple, it's amethyst, that the hyacinths are blueberries, that the clover is emerald, and even the rose is lemon. And I love that he actually picked the lemon rose, because I think yellow is a sign of friendship. I gotta Google this real quick. Yellow rose,
right.
Meaning, yeah. So yeah, it is friendship. Yellow roses are friendship, and so it's this beauty of the moment, and he kind of wraps himself up in it. He wraps himself up in these beautiful colors and the warmth and the moment. The idea of being free to fly, of being able to go into his imagination, return to his childhood, and live things out the way that he wants to. It is that heaven on earth. It is those moments that we are caught within, that we cement within our minds, even if with it comes a little bit of loss. I think that this is just a really beautiful piece that pulls us in to a reminiscing of a time that's now gone. A time when he yearned to be what he once was. And it doesn't mean that the present is anything bad. It just is that idea of leaving something behind, be it a day, hours, or years, or decades in the past. We all have those moments, I think, where we stop and we dwell and think about what we once were, what we once was, and how we've changed from that, both good and bad. Just truly a stunning piece. So thank you, Frank, for submitting that. All right, we have about 17 minutes left in the show and no more poems. So, Faze, tell me what you got going on this week.
So for Double Helix, we have... Oh, actually, it's not a Double Helix week. the next time we have Double Helix, the week after that, we're going to be doing Dexter's contest, which is your personal favorite. And it's about how sometimes our writing is not necessarily received in the way that we expect. So sometimes the ones that we
yes.
love, people kind of look over. And then the ones that we are not as fond of, people love. So it's like that kind of trying to figure out why that is and how to get the ones that you truly love out there. So it's a reflection on being a writer, and that's for Double Helix next time under the Duke of St. Paul, Dex Bailey. And then for Part Center, Part Saint, we will be carrying over a bunch from last week because that had a lot of wonderful rites. But we're also doing the contest Aristotle and Dante Discover the Secrets of the Universe, which is a novel that I read about 10 years ago. I can't believe it's been that long. But the sequel just came out recently, so I was thinking about it. And it's a teen book about some teenage boys who fall in love, but it's like they're very philosophical, and it's a super like diverse, awesome book. Very intelligent young men, and they're kind of from different worlds. You know, one of them is the academic, lived a life of privilege. The other one has a really tough life and is more street smart. So I don't know. It's beautiful. We have some quotes from the books, and that just love to hear your thoughts on the quotes. You don't have to have read the book, although it's a great one, by Benjamin Alir Senez. Sorry if I didn't say that right, it's Spanish. You don't have to read the book. You can just read the quotes and make it about yourself, not just the characters, but how it makes you feel to read the quotes.
Oh, my goodness. Both of those just sound fantastic. But I definitely am excited about Dexter's contest because, gosh, how hot. I think all of us have experienced that where we've written this piece and it's marvelous and it's great and nobody, it doesn't seem like anybody gives it the time of day to really be appreciated in its depth. So that I'm sure is just going to be fantastic. I've not gotten to write poetry for a little bit just because of the chaos of life. And so I might have to make a point to do that. So yes. And then of course, for anybody who doesn't know, this is not Late Night Poets related, but FaZe does have the Beat Wars contest going on. So if you like music, I've been getting to participate in it and it has been fantastic. Just the community that I've gotten to see come out of it, even if you've always just kind of wanted to dabble in it, it's definitely worth an attempt. Like I am by no means a professional, but the insight and the help and the community and the encouragement has just been really cool to partake in. So be sure to check that out too. We are going to be having Black Lace Diaries probably in the next 2 to 3 weeks. So be on the lookout for that. We might be looking at rope bunnies and riggers. So if you don't know what that is, it's people who like to be tied up and those who like to tie up. Check it out. We'll have a contest up here shortly for that. As always, there'll be a couple pictures and some quotes. So yes. But those are 18 and up only contests. So please do not try to partake in that if you are underage. And if you do not live that lifestyle, we do ask that you refrain just so we can let the people who do have an opportunity to speak. So we will have that coming up in the next few weeks. Be on the lookout for it. And that's all I've got for now. So FaZe, thanks for joining me for tonight, hanging out with me. Your insights and your comments are always on point and just fantastic. Pam, thank you for joining me as well for as long as she was able to be here. And of course, to all the poets that allowed us to share their work. Truly, it is you guys that let us have these shows. So for now, I will wish you a fantastic week. And until next time, good night.
Good night.